talk about something that I've been thinking about for a while. I call it general geokinetic theory. Basically, the idea is to look at the most general condition where you can have a geokinetic theory. So, we do need this thing. Okay, so that's a good sign. This is really slow, and may I go? Okay, here we go. No. Yes. Well, I mean, this is the computer we have in Princeton, so probably, yeah. Yes. Well, I didn't think. What? Oh, okay. So, I've come. Sure, thanks. So, I'd like to thank Professor Davidson for support, for his support, and thank Bill Nevins and Xu Chao Xu and Greg Hammett and T.S. For discussion. And I think you've seen this. So basically, we're playing with velocity equation coupled with the Maxwell equation self-consistently. I think we'll skip this. If you look in a strong magnetized plasma, if you look at the characteristics of the velocity equation, it looks like this. It's highly oscillatory. Of course, this high-frequency oscillation is caused by fast gel motion due to strong magnetic field. So the goal of geokinetic theory is to average out the fast gel motion for the velocity of Maxwell equation. I put a quotation mark there because this is not exactly the best way to say it. Actually, I think I will say later it's not averaged out. It's something else. So historically, I would think the first paper by Chu, Goldberg, and Low is the beginning of the geokinetic theory, but it's a totally different form. Then there are many works in the modern formulation. The often used geokinetic ordering, you probably have heard some of them, like low frequency, small wavelengths, or long wavelengths. And so many of them are not really necessary. So so we would like to reduce, to relax those conditions to find the most general format. So, but first we like to clarify what exactly is geokinetic theory. So, first, I think geokinetic theory will be realized to be important because many of the interesting phenomena have a characteristic period much longer than the geo period. And most of our current understanding of magnetized plasma has been developed using implicitly the correct, semi-correct, or incorrect form of geokinetic theory. Of course, when people do particle simulation, they don't want to use time step much comparable to the geo motion if you're interested in long-term behavior. So for the explicit algorithm to be stable, you really need to average them, to basically average them out, average out the fast motion from the equation you're trying to solve. Otherwise, numerically, you're unstable. So what's the physical, but the way to do it is find the physical quantity that are corresponding to the fast motion and average that thing out. Basically, we're trying to average out the general phase, which measures the velocity angle relative to some frame that you picked up. And so you can do this. Take the velocity of Maxwell equation and do this averaging. And this is, seems very reasonable. But really, it doesn't work if you want a rigorous theory. The reason is that if you look at this term, the first term V and the second term, the derivative F, they all depend on general phase. So when you have average like this, you would, you don't know really, you really don't know how to do it. And if you do a Fourier expansion, you have infinite number of terms. So is this term. So the modern method is to basically look at our options of coordinates for the space where the velocity of Maxwell equation resides in, and find a set of coordinates where the general motion is decoupled. One-way decoupled, indeed. So mathematically, we are using the two of the differential geometry. So what is geokinetic theory? So it's not time averaging over geo period, and it's not geo phase average. Of course, it's not spatial average over geo radius. It's a one-way decoupling of the geo phase from the rest of the particle dynamics. As long as the geo phase can be decoupled numerically, the kinetic system can be solved or simulated with larger time step. So we're looking for the most relaxed condition where the geo motion can be decoupled. So we will call the, we basically call this most relaxed condition where, I mean, the geokinetic is the theory formulated in this most relaxed condition, general kinetic theory. So, let me make clear what I mean. So if you look at the, we will try to find out a coordinate system, x, capital X, u is the parallel velocity, mu is the magnetic moment, and geo phase in the t. So where if you look at the x dot, u dot, mu dot, they equal zero. No, sorry. And mu dot, and h, they do not depend on the geo phase. And if you look at the geo phase itself, the dynamics of geo phase itself, it doesn't depend on geo phase either. But it does depend on the rest of the, say, capital X. So this decoupling is a one-way decoupling of the geo phase from the rest of particle dynamics. It's allowed, but it may not be. But for our purpose, it's allowed. Because, if you look at this equation now, once you find out this coordinate, if you look at this equation, you do the geo phase average, the geo phase average, can, that operator can directly operate on the F itself. Because all the coefficients do not depend on geo phase. So that's why you want to do it. And the last term, of course, disappeared because none of them depend on geo phase except this operator. So the name of the game is to find the right coordinate through coordinate transformation. Basically, we're looking at a 60 coordinate with one action angle pair, it's not like the classical book. You see, this action angle pair is not canonical. It's mandated by the structure we're looking at, which is so the canonical feature of the action angle is really not important. It's non-canonical and non-fiber. So I will explain what the non-fiber mean later. Some people have seen this before. Maybe several people see this several times already. So basically, the name of the game is to find the right coordinate. So, but I think in this cartoon, this Snoopy thinks that if somebody marked the meridian, then everything is fine. But the thing is, somebody needs to do that work. So I said we need a coordinate transformation. Then you have to understand geometrically what is a coordinate transformation, because where you try to use the concept of geometry. So basically, the coordinate transformation is like this. Suppose you have a space, you have a coordinate for one point on the space. Basically, it's a map between that point to R6. And of course, you can have another coordinate, different patch, right? Like a polar coordinate, you have to use different patch to cover the whole space. And then the same point could end up with two points on the R6. And this correspondence basically is coordinate transformation. So So that's geometrically point of view. And basically, we want to know how does the dynamics transform when you have this kind of coordinate transformation. So you will see later the coordinate transform as a one form. One form is basically a function on the vector. It's basically 1-0 tensor. Classically, we call it a covariant, and we call vector a contravariant, but that's like an ancient name. The modern name basically call it one form and the vector. So when you have a coordinated transformation, mathematically, you know, the one form transforms by pulling back. So that's how the host, so that's why it's very easy to work with one form. So the one form we are working basically is from a concrete Cartan one form. And you can actually somehow derive this from some very basic principle. I think I derived this last time, but this minus sign is really the minus sign in the special in the Riemann tensor in the special relativity. So here's the Hamiltonian dynamic Hamilton's equation. Basically, take the one form, take the exterior derivative, you get a two form, and these two form operate on this vector on the phase space, gives you zero, and these vectors describe the particle dynamics in the phase space. And you can further develop this equation and to basically put it in the mathematical language that you have this two form would give you so-called symplectic structure, which is non-trivial and closed. But I think we really don't need this. I think this equation will serve our purpose well enough. And from this equation, you can construct a volume form, Liouville volume form. And this actually couples back to the Maxwell equation to tell you how to do your phase space velocity integral. So therefore, I actually, to write a geokinetic equation, you don't need a metric at all. You need this basically particle dynamics to tell you how particles behave, and this particle dynamics also tell you how to do a phase space integral, because that gives you the volume form you need. So now let's try to define the coordinate. So let's first we do this. See, this is the particle coordinate in a laboratory frame, x, v and x. You write down these two equations, and this equation uniquely defines many things. First, it defines this a vector b, then this vector c. So this, vector b is defined by external field, and this vector c is defined through this equation. And the u basically is a perpendicular velocity, and w is the parallel basically parallel velocity. D is basically, as you can, most people can realize, it's the e cross b drift. And then you define this capital X through this expression, and of course we're dealing with the general version of geokinetic theory, so all of them depend on time, and you stick this thing again. So this is coordinate transformation, and we have the coordinate independent of the one form. We stick this thing in there. We try to find out the leading order, second order term. So, of course, I have to tell you what's the small parameter, but I'll tell you later. So, to the leading order, that's what you get. And this leading order is geophase independent. You see, there is no geophase in it. I mean, all the coefficients are not geophase dependent. Of course, you have a geophase itself. And this gamma 1 has many terms. So, basically, as you can see, this. The gamma 1 basically related to the inhomogeneity of B field, like this, and those inhomogeneity of B field, all the time variation of B, your field. And so the small parameter really, as David said yesterday, you know, this thing is not that complicated. You just do it and assume all the conditions you need and be honest about it. It turns out the only thing you need, and you're honest about it, is these three conditions. The first one, you need the B field inhomogeneity is small, and also the time variation is slow. Notice that this is a total time variation. So if you have a, you can have a fast variation, a small scale fast variation. And also the E field should satisfy the same condition. But this EL, I mean large amplitude and large scale electrical field. Of course, you can have a small scale, small amplitude E field. And this thing can, the and the time variation of the small field can be arbitrarily large. And also the spatial variation of small field can be large too. So this is the only three condition you need to do this expansion. Yeah. This is basically the both of them can exist independently. You can have a situation where you don't have a small scale E field at all, or you can have a situation where your total field is E small. So in that case, you don't need this condition at all. So you only need this condition. So in that case, your total E field can be fast varying and has very high spatial wavelengths. So that's why I split them. But that's why you don't do it for B, but you do it for E. Yeah, come on.
I have a two-part question. So are you saying that you're allowing the large-scale E parallel to be arbitrary?
Yes. That's a point that you see not the case for all the classical work. I'm not showing this today. The result actually I will show later basically assume that is zero, but actually it's not. You don't need to, but I didn't just type them out. But the answer is yes. I do allow large parallel E field.
And you're also allowing the cross B velocities to be comparable to the speed of light?
Yes. Actually, that's true. In a sense, E cross B is now a drift. It's basically Lorentz transformation. You get rid of the very beginning. So therefore, actually, see, this transformation exists before I have all these conditions. So therefore, the E cross B drift is always there, even though your B field can be really, really tiny. I think I have expressed this opinion several times. E cross B is not a drift. It's more like a Lorentz transformation. Yeah, so that's this one.
No, grad
E. Oh, why
compare
grade to B with itself? That's not a quantitative prism. This basically shows this is the scalens of E field. That thing has to be smaller than the general radius. So because when you do expansion, you have a term like this, and you basically compare this term with.
But D is the E cross B velocity, right?
Yes.
So that's what matters, not E
itself,
but E over.
Yes, but you should compare it with the E itself. In a sense, you compare this term with just this term itself. This is the first derivative with the D itself. Whether you can replace this thing by, well, first, if you put a D there, then the dimension is not right. So you do need to. Well, but I think this works, but that one, I don't know. Maybe the equivalent or maybe not. I'm not sure. Yeah.
One last question for a moment. Your vectors A, B, and C are local vectors?
Yes. Yes.
If your E cross B velocity is too large, your particle will, in the time it gyrates in one cycle, it will have drifted to another field.
Yeah, that's fine. That's allowed.
That's allowed?
Yes. The only thing for you to get to this point is all the spatial derivative is smaller than the you know background scale length. So that's why the E parallel can be large, because the E parallel small condition never appeared in this derivation. So. So this is okay. So once you have this first order one form, you want to transform this bad one form into good one, and we use the Lie perturbation method. I think Alain covered this in his talk. So basically, what do you do? It's actually quite simple. You ask the question when you have a coordinate transformation, how the one form transform? The one form is put back, as I said many times. And by then, the coordinate transformation itself is generated by a vector field, right? Then you ask the question, how does the vector field generate a coordinate transformation? And basically, it's a Lie derivative generated by the vector field. So that's the formula. It's basically you use the Lie derivative to put it back. So basically, the transform the gamma one is the equals original one and plus the put back version of using the vector field. And you can use this Cousin's magic formula to simplify a little bit. This I basically is really inner product between V and this two form, which is basically this action of this two form on the small v. And so that's the formula you use to figure out what is the transform, the gamma one. And you basically impose those good conditions on this gamma one and to figure out what kind of g, which is basically one, a g1 here, that you needed to satisfy those good conditions. So yeah, after many pages of derivation, you know, this is what you end up with. So as I said, this thing should be Jarl phase independent, but both A and the C are Jarl phase dependent, right? But the combination of this doesn't. That's a good thing. And so is here. Both A and C are Jarl phase dependent, but then this combination doesn't depend on Jarl phase. That's basically all you get. Of course, that looks very simple, but it takes some time to figure them out. Here, I assume the E parallel only has perpendicular version of it, a perpendicular E parallel large field. I didn't write out the large parallel version. My time is running out. Okay. So once we figure out a good coordinate, then we have to look at the Maxwell equation. So the Maxwell equation, Maxwell equation involves phase space integration. And so the current kinetic theory really deals with the particle distribution on the so-called cotangent space. What it means is that you assume at every configuration space, the vector is built on top of it. And you do this for the velocity integral, it's really at each configuration point, it's integration on that fiber, cotangent fiber. However, in the general kinetic theory, the useful coordinate are non-fiber. That means the capital X is not really the particle's configuration space. In Steve's language, the center of the ring. And the V is not the particle's velocity as well. It's more like a mixture between small x and small v. So how do you construct this quantity, say the density and the current, in the laboratory frame, basically on the rim of the ring? It's not on the center of the ring. The distribution function you know is basically the center of that ring. So there are a couple of methods to do it. The simplest one, you just pull back this the distribution function on the center of the ring into onto the rim of the ring, which is the real particle position in the laboratory frame. So this is the pullback formula. Actually, is quite simple. Just for every distribution function in the capital X, once you know the transformation from small x to capital X, you can construct a distribution function in the small x by just this construction. So that's the basic definition of pullback. Again, so vector is a pushed forward form, and functions are pulled back because function is zero form. And that's how you do it. And another way to do it is by generalize this concept of moment integral into a integration in a 6D over the whole phase space. Then you put a parameter there to parameterize the integration of phase space. This R is dummy variable or parameter. The good thing about this is you need this formula tells you exactly you should use the so-called volume form in the phase space, which you actually know from particle dynamics. It's from the one form you can construct a little bit of volume form. So that's why this formula is easy to use. For the physics application, the thing we need is really a delta function. The parameterized integrand is basically delta function. From here, you actually can see the this is in a laboratory frame construction. This thing is nothing but the normal integration we know. However, you don't know this small f. You have to write this thing. You have put this thing back from the capital X. So you put this back from the capital X, but then you have basically expressed this thing too. This thing has to be put back too. And this is a formula using this so-called the ring coordinate. So this delta function, now you can see, actually pick up all those rings that end up with the same spatial coordinate. So that's basically that. So therefore, the pullback of the gyrocentric transformation is a necessary theoretical construction for the kinetic theory because you need it to complete your Maxwell equation. It basically answers the question, given the distribution function in the capital coordinate, how do you write the flux, density, and the current in the laboratory coordinate? And you can use the pullback, or you can use the generalized velocity integral. I think I covered this. So you do need the coordinate transformation itself. For that problem I just described, the coordinate transformation is quite complicated. So this is the X component of it. So it's really, really complicated. You see the dependence on the field is... sure. Yeah. The dependence on the field is, you see like B cubed on the denominator, this kind of thing. And if you plug this thing into the Maxwell equation, you get a really very nonlinear term in your Maxwell equation in terms of field quantity. That's probably the so-called conservation of trouble that Greg mentioned. I don't know if this is a big problem for numerical solution of Maxwell equation, but that's what you get. But the trouble you saved is in the Vlasov equation. So then my conclusion, I've tried to derive a set of fully nonlinear electromagnetic geokinetic equation in arbitrary geometry. As you can see, I never assume any geometry. So. And they allow large amplitude, larger scale electrical field, and a small amplitude, small scale electrical field coexist independently. That's all. Thanks.